You are listening to the Furla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 283. Uber is doomed!
Season 7, episode 203 of the Furla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February the 26th, 2017. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and nominated for Best Lego Batman Movie Ever is my brother, James Furlow.
Yeah, so is that movie as good as I would like it to be?
It is.
I haven't seen it yet.
Fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was one of those things where it starts out, and in the first, like, 30 seconds, I'm like, I'm chuckling a little bit, like, haha, that's kind of funny. And then at 35 seconds, I started guffawing. I like, lost it. I was like, okay, really? this is what I wanted. Yeah, just right out the gate with and it's such a weird movie.
I'm just thinking about it.
I know. One of the things that's really good at when, like, you know, you classically good, really good kids movies are entertaining for everybody, but they'll usually throw in a couple of jokes for adults, you know, that sort of like double entendre, innuendo. And
yeah,
sometimes, and a lot of times kids movies will do the double entendre and with like sexual innuendos and stuff. And like Lego Movie is really, the Lego movies so far have like really gone out of their way to completely avoid that sort of innuendo, but to go with really like, know their subject innuendos, whether they're making fun of Hollywood, they're making fun of like Batman and like stereotypes and stuff and like in comic books. And they're just like, I still think the fact that the confrontation that was set up in the Lego movie between the Green Lantern and Superman being Jonah Hill and what's his name? What's the other guy's name?
Brandon.
He was in Channing Tatum as Superman. And just the two of them going at it and doing their whole 21 Jump Street thing. Like, oh, it's so good. And that doesn't have anything to do with Lego or like superheroes or anything. That's just like a weird, you know, you're in the weeds joke that, and there's a lot of jokes like that in this movie. It's oh my gosh.
So you recommend it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was telling Jesse, like, I've decided I want to see the live action Beauty and the Beast. Despite the main characters, I should say, I really want to see it for Be Our Guest. Essentially, if I could just watch that scene, I think I would be happy. And so I told her, I was like, we should probably see this in theaters because I feel like that scene in particular will be amazing.
I'm a big fan of the guy who plays Gaston too, so I'm optimistic.
Oh yeah, he's pretty.
I'm optimistic.
Yeah, he's good. Well, I think like Cogsworth is awesome, Lumiere is awesome. They got like the supporting cast.
Oh yeah,
is amazing.
Oh yeah,
and you could forgive what they've done with the Beast.
yeah, I agree. And you know, and it's funny because it's like I'm not exactly sure who I have no idea who I'd have them cast for Belle, but part of it is it's like it's not my Belle, man. It's not my Belle. Like,
I know.
I just which is not a criticism because I'm not sure you could cast somebody who would like knock it out of the park for me, but
yeah,
that's not her.
Who would be? I man, that would be hard.
It's, you know what's weird? Part of it is the fact that she's English, and Belle is French. It's a French country town, and it just and like there's all these like little weird details. I'm just like, it doesn't work for me. I'm sure she'll do a good job. She's a talented actress, but this is pretty awesome.
Despite that, I'm excited to watch that movie. But the other one, and I'm trying to talk Jesse into watching the Batman Lego movie in theaters as opposed to waiting until it comes out, because that will probably be what happens.
Yeah,
which is what we did with the Lego movie. Did I tell you what happened with that one? So we got busy. We didn't even have kids. That wasn't even an excuse at the time, but we just got busy. and just ended up missing it until finally we were like, all right, let's go watch it. And then it was no longer in theaters.
Oh,
and I was like, oh man, we blew it. And so, so I was like, ah, whatever, when it comes out, it'll come out. And we just kind of let it go. We finally, I was like, hey Jess, it's on iTunes. We should probably download it and watch it. I hear it's great. We do. And Jesse goes, oh my gosh, I finally get all the jokes the kids have been talking about in school. That's awesome. It's like, oh, see, told you. So
that's funny.
Pretty funny. So I don't want to be in that position again. But
yeah.
So have you been following Oscars tonight, right?
The Oscar. Oscars are right now. So there's actually been a really great joke that they've learned. So Jimmy Kimmel is hosting and he's been harping on what's his name?
I don't know. You're doing
really I know. I'm so. It's like I got it. It's on the tip of my tongue. He's the guy from Will Hunting, Good Will Hunting.
The main character guy.
Yeah, the main
Jason
one.
Jason Bourne. That same person.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Linus from Ocean's 11. Oh, I've got
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
I know. Matt. But yeah, he's been attacking Matt Damon all night long, which has been.
Oh, well, that's his thing.
I know. It's been really enjoyable.
It's awesome.
I know. It's been really good. Oh, man.
I wonder, because he started that just like day one, just attacking Matt Damon and just like out of the blue. And I wonder, what happened? What was it? Really random, and he just picked somebody who he actually liked and just started making fun of him.
Or they're really good friends. Him, Ben Affleck, that whole the Good Will Hunting crew, the Affleck brothers and everything. They're all really good friends. So it's there was a little bit of controversy. I think what happened was there was some controversy at the time. He was dating Sarah Silverman was involved with Jimmy Kimmel, I think it was, or something like that, and there was some gossip that got started between them. Somebody might be listening thinking you got this completely wrong, but they were like once Jimmy Kimmel got going, just
it's a pretty funny running gag.
He's just keeping it going, so it's been good. They had a they actually, so you know how they do those Hollywood bus tours where they bring you around to all the actors' homes and stuff? They had
one.
I've
been on one, but I know of them.
Yeah.
To clarify that.
They got one tonight that was basically empty, and they brought them to the theater, and they had them all get off, and they told them that they're going to be going to this exhibit of Hollywood dresses in and suits and stuff. Uh-huh. And so they bring him, and so they open the door, and there's 15 people maybe. And they're they bring him into the Oscars, and they just walk along the front, and they're meeting all the people in the front row, and they're just losing their minds. It was pretty fantastic. Awesome. Yeah. It's been a pretty good one. La La Land has won a couple, unsurprisingly.
Hey, shocker.
I know. But
all right, let's see how I do. Emma Stone, Best Actress. I'm saying Casey Affleck for Best Actor and La La Land overall Best Picture. Those are my three.
Oh man,
predictions.
So Fences has already gotten one, so I feel like that's one that it's in the running for. You know, it's.
And did you say that Suicide Squad won an Oscar?
Yes. Suicide Squad is an Oscar award-winning.
Movie
film, huh? yeah
so
just
and you really said it was the best makeup, right?
Yeah,
see, I feel like with an Oscar, the movie should meet some sort of minimum threshold of quality first before it can even be considered.
You can't just do one thing incredibly well.
Exactly. It's no, you did most things pretty well, but man, this one thing was awesome. You know what I'm saying?
It's despite itself, the movie made an enormous amount of money.
It means
something. I'm not sure it means much, but it means something. It has some level of popularity. Critics hated it, which is kind of weird that they gave it an award.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, Oscars is somehow money's involved, right? How does that work?
Yeah. So what happens is so there's voting that goes on, and each member of the Academy gets a vote. But because there's voting, that means that lobbying is possible. So they literally, cause it's worth a lot. If you can say your movie's an Oscar award winning movie, that's worth a lot of money. It's one of the reasons why, Amazon really wants, wants Manchester by the Sea to win something so they can say they make Oscar award winning movies. So what they'll do is literally in Hollywood, they'll put advertisements up and stuff and be like, this movie should be Oscar award winning, and they will be lobbying, and there will be like, there are lunches, there's deals, there's all sorts of stuff.
That's interesting.
And they'll collude. They'll basically try to like,
best actor. If you give me best art makeup, I gotcha.
Right. Exactly. And that, you know, and as crazy as it is, might have something to do with it. that could have put them over the line, you know, and
weird.
some really, you know, and there's like a lot of times like.
So this is literally we're watching a popular. I guess it's a popularity contest of no consequence.
None whatsoever.
Awesome. I mean, like at least a political. It's a popularity contest, but there's consequence.
Yeah.
But all right.
Yeah, awesome. And it's interesting. It's a weird thing we do here. I don't know. I enjoy it. I think the nicest thing you can say about it is that there are some great works of art.
A meta movie.
Yeah, it kind of is, man.
Okay.
It's this whole.
If thing I look is, at it in that light, it's acceptable.
And that's part of the reason why.
You know
it's
what?
Like I can.
But you know what?
Oh yeah, what? This is not, it's not what we're here to talk about. Thank you. I was.
I would have like, gone for another hour.
Yeah, that's not what we're here to talk about. Why am I still going? This week, James, like every week, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera of soap operas. And by corporate opera, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show. Which is still a long time from now. James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I founded and work for HPI, but I do not represent HPI or any of their opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club, still, shockingly.
Neither of us own any part of Uber, and you know, depending on how today goes, we'll see if we ever do. If you want to know more about our thoughts and opinions throughout the weeks or pictures we take, whatever, you can follow us on the social media. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4.
James Furlow everywhere.
I like it. Also go to furlowbros.com if you want to get all of our show notes. So all the articles we talk about this week will be linked there. You can also sign up for that entire thing as like a newsletter to go to your email every week. It's really great. It works as a recap of all the important stuff that happened in the week. So if you only got a little bit of time, you want to peruse words and don't like the sound of our voice, that's a great thing to sign up for. So yeah, go check it out. We appreciate it.
So I want to start out with bad news.
Okay.
I don't know if you know this, but the Furlow Bros tech podcast
is awesome.
FurlowBros.com. The website itself is hosted on or supported by Cloudflare. I don't know if you know that. It's super nice because it's a content distribution network, a CDN. And so it essentially helps our site to load faster. If for some reason something goes down on our end, they have everything cached and can keep it up and alive. They're also checking for spam and other stuff, keeping the site safe.
Awesome.
It's super nice. Yeah.
It's nice of them.
I primarily do it for the speed bump, but whatever.
That's the advantage of CDN.
Mm-hmm. And then the actual podcast files themselves are stored on AWS as just part of their S3 service. And so when you're actually downloading a podcast, you're getting it from Amazon. But the website itself, and by the way, emails are also a totally different service. Just want to put it out there. Okay? So we're healthily diversified.
Yeah.
This is important because Cloudflare had a bug in their code.
Hmm.
Yeah, it turns out that they had a somewhere in their software where it was supposed to be two equal signs next to each other. There was actually a greater than an equal sign next to each other. So it was a single character. The problem is that this piece of code was in the buffer overrun part.
Oh, that is not good. The buffer overflow? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely the worst place to have that.
So the idea, the best I can understand the buffer overflow, is as it's collecting data, it has a certain amount of space on its server.
Yep, a buffer.
A buffer. And it says, we can take up to this amount of data. That's what it was supposed to say. Instead, it said, we can take up to that amount and more.
Right.
Obviously, the server cannot. So the source went to go put the data into the server and went, oh, it's full. And so just left it in other places, other servers, other websites. And we're talking full HTTPS requests, client IP addresses, full responses, cookies, passwords, keys, data, everything.
That is really bad, man.
They recently found it, and it's been going since September, apparently.
Oh. Oops. That is just, yeah, that is just upsetting. I don't even know what to do with that. Because, I mean, like, it's, yeah, a buffer overflow is, like, all the greatest attacks, all the greatest, like, if you hear about a bug that, you know, a virus or something, it is almost certainly, like, the really, really big ones that have names, they use a buffer overflow style attack, because effectively, like you said, allows you to write places that you're not supposed to write, because, you know, the RAM doesn't know what kind of data it has or where that data goes. You have to tell the program, hey, allocate this much RAM for this much information, and how you protect the rest of the program is by allocating the right place at the right time. And a buffer overflow will just allow you to the Heartbleed thing a couple years ago was a buffer overflow.
And so they're calling this one Cloudbleed.
Wow. Nailed that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the interesting part about it is not only do they host, let's see, there was data leaked across 3,438 unique domains. Just in the 5-day period of February. So they host a lot of websites. Again, one of which is ours. And the big scary part about this is that it's not just the ones on their network that are affected. Because of the way it works, it's if you have like another site that's loaded around the same time or somehow like they're... I don't totally remember how it works, but... It could be everywhere. So the big PSA, if you will, is change your passwords. All of them. And like which you should be doing regularly. By the way, do you use a password manager? This is time for truth or dare.
You want me to tell
just yes or no?
Yeah, but that sort
of... Do you use either... We'll do this. Do you use two of the biggest ones? LastPass or 1Password? I think it's 1Password.
No, I don't use either of those.
Okay. It's a good thing you don't use 1Password, because guess who they have on their content network? According to them, it's all good. No user data got out.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they're going to try to convince you.
Which you're like, oh my gosh. I personally use LastPass, and I pay the $10 a year or whatever it is to have the pro stuff, because then I can share things with Jesse, which is nice. Just so we both have it. Yeah, but I've gone through, and now I'm trying to like thinking of the timeline, because I think I started in January. I would listen to a podcast and it was talking about security, and I was finally like, okay, I'm doing it. I'm convinced. And so
advertising works.
Yeah, well, it wasn't advertising. I don't know. It was just this guy was like, here's why you should be doing it. So I was like, all right, I'm on it. And so I switched over. I think it's LastPass. Is that what I did? I don't know. I don't even think about
hopefully.
It. Yeah, I think it is. My LastPass vault. Yeah. And so I switched everything over, and I've switched every single password to something that I couldn't tell you what it is anymore.
Yeah.
And I just have a main password now. So in theory, I could change them all and I wouldn't notice, which is nice.
Yeah, that's, you know.
But anyways, Cloudbleed, that's the latest big one. I think this is like time for us to just accept the fact that it's like, once or twice a year, something bad happens and change our passwords. Because now, like, I don't have any shared passwords, which is also nice. So if one of the sites was hacked, which, again, there's actually no evidence that some black hat hackers took advantage of it. And so
there wouldn't be if they did their job.
Right. Well, yeah. But anyways, they, I don't even know what I'm going for. Change your passwords. Make them all unique. Many characters. There's variations.
This is one of those
last
like,
pass.
How are you going to say password managers are going to just have to become the standard? Because like you said, the whole idea is that it's a single gatekeeper, and it's, how do I want to say this? So like one of the advantages of Apple Pay is that every time you use Apple Pay, it uses a unique, what's it called? Credit card number. And Apple tells the bank on the back end,
right,
they do the connection. So the actual terminal, the store, the everybody else, all the untrusted partners, they don't know what your credit card number is. And so that's effectively what you can do with a password. Like it's a similar idea in that these password tools allow you to have unique, randomized, incredibly difficult ones to hack. And anytime there's any question, it just, you can easily just hit a button and it'll come up with a new password. But yeah, man, that is
I'm going to, I'm definitely going to recommend to my kids, just do that day one.
Right. Like, start with that.
Cause I actually, I did it for mine, and then I moved all of Jesse's passwords into LastPass, but I didn't update any of them. And before then, I had them all in a Google Doc. And I had a bunch of repeated passwords because, you know, it's a pain in the butt to come up with new passwords.
Yeah,
so I'm in a better place now. So I'm not quite as scared when I see this, but, man, it's another one. Just got to expect it.
Yep. Yeah. So, what do I want to say? So, this is a little more exciting. It has to do with things outside of the internet. It has to do with real things. So last week we spent a while talking to you about, the types of telescopes we have and what they can see.
Yeah.
Now we're bringing new telescopes online all the time. Well, what's really exciting is that without any of these new telescopes, NASA made a bit of a discovery. They pointed their satellite out into outer space. About 40 years ago, light started to bounce from the TRAPPIST-1 system, and we've been studying that light real closely, and it turns out we are quite sure that there are 7 planets that are Earth-sized.
Whoa.
In that solar system.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And what's even more important is that 3 of them are in what's called the habitable zone.
Ooh.
And what that is it's a distance. You know the size of the sun. You know how hot the sun is. At a certain distance from the sun, you'll be receiving just enough light for if the atmospheric conditions are right for them to be warm enough to have liquid water. And so this is exciting because we've got one solar system only 40 years light years away that has at least three planets that are all potentially have liquid water. And since we have nice. One known example of life in the universe, that is Earth, we're going to start looking at those sorts of planets for any signs of life.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So this is pretty exciting from a,
so 40 light years, huh?
Yeah. So it'd take us, if we sent a probe today to go and take pictures and send images back, we would not get the first images. If we could travel at nearly the speed of light and we launched it today, we would not get our photos back for another 8 years. We cannot travel at nearly the speed of light.
If we travel faster than the speed of light? Like twice as fast.
Yes! Yes! Okay, I can turn off the Oscars.
What?
Casey won.
Boom! Called it.
That's all I cared about. So, yeah, like I've said, Manchester by the Sea. Prepare for sad. You are not. If you go in prepared for sad, you are not ready. So it's. I don't recommend you watch it. Actually, as a father.
Oh, all right.
Because I don't think you need that in your life. But yeah, so we're now looking at these planets, and we're trying to find signs of life. That's kind of what we're going for. What we'll be doing is we'll have these new telescopes come online, both Earth-bound ones and space-bound ones. We're going to be able to take better pictures of their atmospheres.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yes.
Why are we looking for signs of life? Like you just said, we can't get there in any reasonable amount of time. Maybe that doesn't matter.
Well, because, okay, so it doesn't matter. If there's this, it's called it's not the Feynman paradox. It's, what's his name? I am just on one today, man.
Yeah, you're just batting 1,000 on names.
I know. Thankfully, I can just Google this. The Fermi paradox. There we go. So the Fermi paradox.
Fermi paradox. Okay.
Yes. The Fermi paradox, named after Enrico Fermi, famous scientist, is the apparent contradiction between the lack of evidence and the high probability estimates, e.g., those given by the Drake equation for the existence of extraterrestrial civilization. The basic point of the argument made by the physicist. There are billions of stars in this galaxy, just this one, that are similar to the sun, many of which are billions of years older than Earth. With high probability, some of these stars will have Earth-like planets. And what we're finding is that the more we look, we were underestimating how many Earth-like planets there are. The more we look, the more we realize there's a ton of Earth-like planets out there. Some of which might have intelligent life. Some of these civilizations might develop interstellar travel, a step the Earth is investigating now. Even at the slow pace of currently envisioned interstellar travel, the Milky Way galaxy could be completely traversed in a few million years. According to this line of reasoning, the Earth should have already been visited by extraterrestrial aliens. In an informal conversation, Fermi noted no convincing evidence of this leading him to ask, where
unless
is everybody?
Unless they're operating under the Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm. There have been many attempts
Roswell.
To explain the Fermi paradox.
What are we talking about?
I know. Primarily either suggesting that intelligent extraterrestrial life is extremely rare or proposing reasons that such civilizations have not contacted or visited Earth. So, yeah, that's exactly that. There's an entire like. You can read books and books, and there's tons of YouTube videos about.
We'll reach out to them just in case they're not reaching out to us.
No, so the problem is, and it's the Fermi paradox. It's there is a basic assumption of the universe that we are missing. if about how we what we believe about science and life, and how, you know, is it possible for life to spontaneously
find a
begin
way.
And stuff like, you know, and there's this what the Fermi paradox is pointing out is that everything that we understand about the universe would suggest that there should be interstellar civilizations, intelligent interstellar civilizations. And there's not, as far as we can tell. Why is the question. And so if we look at these planets and we see evidence of, and we can do spectral analysis on the atmosphere from home, from here, and we see that there's all sorts of organic compounds in the air, organic compounds that don't occur naturally without biological mechanisms working, at least on a
like methane, you know, gas.
Yeah, stuff like that. If we look at these and we see that kind of stuff, then all of a sudden we have this really – the paradox gets even weirder, because we sit there and go like, well, at least basic microbiology can begin. Maybe even pre-micro, maybe even pre-cellular. But at some level, biological processes are occurring. And if that's true, then why aren't there aliens? and that's the essence of it. So we're just trying to get there. But if we look at these stars, and if we keep looking at different planets like this and different star systems, and the further we look and the more frequently that we look, the more we find out that no, there's no biology going on anywhere else in the galaxy. Huh. That would mean something different. And we'd have to weigh that in a different way. And so, yeah, it's entirely possible that we're just the first, which feels weird considering the age of the universe as, So that's why we're curious. We don't actually – we'll probably never go to these planets in all likelihood. We're almost less likely to go if there's actual aliens there, because that
– we don't want to mess it up. Sneeze
or them. Or there's guy – what's his name? Oh, my. I am seriously – I can't believe I'm doing this again. The scientist, awesome. My brain is just not working. The scientist who sits in a wheelchair, talks through
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. I wasn't even going to come up with that. Stephen Hawking is actually currently advocating for us stopping blasting radio signals into the universe, because he's like, look, if every case of one species interacting with another species, especially if there's any threat, ends in war, like or the destruction of one species. Like, do we, a non-interstellar species, want to like catch the attention of an interstellar species?
Ah.
You know, like that. Like,
I've seen Independence Day 1 and 2.
Exactly, and don't choose too bad, but you know. Why do we assume that just because they're intelligent, they'd be, benevolent?
Peaceful.
There's right, and it's, and you know, and so it's there's.
I'm with Stephen Hawking on this one. It sounds
kinda,
weird to say.
Kinda. Well,
Mars
that's
is still fair game. I'm cool with that.
Exactly, and that's part of the whole Fermi paradox. Is it possible that there are that the Milky Way is teeming with intelligent life that's intelligent enough to keep their head down, and we gotta get on board with that.
And then there's us.
Yeah, there's the
not quite intelligent enough yet.
Yeah, exactly. There's the what they call it is I can do this one.
You got this.
Fermi paradox. The great filters. So there's these things that they call the great filters, and this idea that if the solar system doesn't have intelligent life, let's say there just isn't any out there, then yeah, there's this idea of a filter that prevents intelligent life from becoming interstellar. It might happen at the molecular, at the single cell stage. It might be that step from, we know biological chemicals occur naturally when the conditions are right. Get a little bit of electricity in the atmosphere, you know, in lightning, you get a little bit of heat, you get a little bit of water, you get the right like component molecules going on, and RNA spontaneously forms. We can do it in labs. We know that happens. Now, that step from RNA and DNA floating around in the soup that is the primordial ocean, becoming a single cell organism, that's a pretty big step. We've not actually seen that. So that might be a filter. That might just never happen. There's the going from single cell to multi-cell. That might be a great filter, but it's entirely possible that it's actually really common for species for multicellular species to develop neural networks of some form, or, you know, intelligence of some form, become intelligent enough to start manipulating the weather and then cause rampant global change that wipes out the species. And that's the other big concern, is that there is a filter that comes next. There have been intelligent species that have developed before us. And the reason why they're not interstellar is because something else is stopping that, and that's what our species is barreling towards. One of those proposed great filters is an intergalactic empire that just kind of squashes species that come along. That's entirely possible. They're just advanced enough to hide their signature.
Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just like, look, we don't want anybody to rise up and threaten us. So anytime we keep ourselves hidden, and anytime anything rises to a high enough level for us to worry about it, we just rain down,
boom,
you know, fire and brimstone on their planet.
It would have been like Independence Day, but a lot earlier
in
our history.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's kind of where we're at with all of this stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And so biological processes occurring, even
it's an interesting question. Still not convinced it's the best use of our resources. But it's interesting.
Hey man, okay. Sometimes exploration, the thing with exploration is you don't know what you're gonna find. And sometimes the journey to discovering it is where you make all the valuable discoveries. Velcro.
Fair enough.
Lithium ion batteries.
Tang. I got it.
Tang. Yeah. Ironically, not one of the it was another company that came up with that. The astronauts just drank it and made it cool.
That is cool.
Also, pens that can write in space. Not a NASA project.
Turns out a pencil works just as well.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. That is true. And also, that joke, although funny, is not based in reality whatsoever.
Cool beans. All right. It's time to come back down to Earth.
Yeah.
So, I love weeks like this where we just get the dog on a company for being dumb. And, this one has given us plenty to talk about. We're talking about Uber, of course.
Woo-hoo, super duper Uber.
Okay. So they currently have four big problems on their hands.
Yeah. They're all kind of tanks because I'm going to sum them all up in this one thing. Cause I read this article. It was, I believe it was actually a Verge article. It was a Verge article. It was an Engadget article. And they described it as all of these things kind of fall under the umbrella of a credibility crisis. And
okay.
They build towards that. And this is it's interesting because this is something that we've been almost every time we talk about Uber, it is related to the same problem. It is a company.
Yeah, credibility. I was thinking character, but yeah, I could go with credibility.
Yeah. Well, that's, we can say the credibility crisis is it is rooted in poor character, but it is the credibility that's going to hurt them. Because until now, they've had a lot of credibility, and that's starting to fall apart on a number of fronts.
Yeah. So I know my own personal history with Uber. It's going to sound really weird. Via other people. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
So I've never actually used Uber, because of where I live and the cars that I own, I just haven't had a need for it. But right. I have always imagined myself like traveling someday and using Uber. For the time being, it's made the most sense just to rent a car, which is super lame. But anyways, I have dreams of using it. I just haven't had the opportunity yet. Okay? Fair enough. So my own personal story started with reading, I think it was like Pando Daily or something like that, or maybe they're just Pando now. I used to follow their website all the time until they put it up into a paywall and asked for $100 a year. And I just went, you know, your writing's not, I mean, it's good, but it's not that good. So I don't follow them anymore. But the owner of that, Sarah Lacey, I think, she hates Uber. Mm. And she doesn't even try to pretend around it. And it's Travis Kalanick, I guess. And this... This will make a ton of sense now. I guess he said some fairly sexist things to her. And she was just like, what? And then was like, no, I didn't. What are you talking about? She was like, what? And, you know, so that's how the relationship started. And so she was instantly combative with him from then on. He was vice versa. And so that was my first, like, introduction to Uber. Yeah. This person going, they're the worst. He's the worst. I hate him.
Which, from the very get-go, that has been, like, Tylan wants to jail him, the CEO. Like, he's got issues, and we've talked about this before. Like,
yeah, so, yeah, just at the very least, not a nice person, from right. what I understand. And then I was listening to the Startup Podcast, and... Is that the Startup? It was either the Startup Podcast or the Tim Ferriss Show. I can't remember, one of the two. But anyways, it was interviewing, a VC guy. He's been on Shark Tank recently. Likes cowboy boots. I can't even think of it right now. Let's see here. If I type in VC cowboy.
Mark Cuban.
Nope.
No.
This guy's worth so much more than Mark Cuban.
Oh, really?
Okay. He was an early investor in Twitter. We did an entire article where let's see if I do VC Twitter maybe. His name has got to pop up. Whoa. I just got all Twitter results. That's not VC Twitter investor, fellow Twitter investor. I feel like 17 venture capital and angel investors to follow on Twitter. This has got to be one of them.
Chris Sacca! Yes! Thank you. You want to know what the winning Google was? Okay, yeah. I'm going to give it to you. Venture capitalist, cowboy boots, Twitter investor, and that finally turned up the Chris Sacca Wikipedia.
Chris Sacca. So he was interviewed a couple times. He's a big investor in Twitter, also a big investor in Uber.
Okay.
And so he was on, I think it was the Startup, I think is what it was, which is the podcasting startup where he was being pitched, and he was like, your pitch is horrible here. Let me tell you how to do a pitch. And so he repitched the founder
Gimlet Media.
Yeah. And like, and you listen to it, and even the guy was like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah.
And then Chris Sacca, he goes, yeah, but I can do it the other way around too. I can tell you why you're going to fail. And then gives him an anti pitch, which was also just as convincing. And he was just like, whoa.
Yeah. I don't even know what to make of my company anymore.
Yeah. It's like, how did you do that? And he played the entire, it's in the very first episode of Startup in season one. It's worth listening to just for that interaction with Chris Sacca.
Okay.
Anyways, Chris Sacca goes on to explain, he goes, I invest in people, not companies necessarily or ideas, but invest in people. And one of the things that he knows about Travis, and this was a story, he had a party over at his house. Travis was one of the people that was there who like played Chris Sacca's dad in like Wii Tennis, because his dad was into Wii Tennis. And okay. And I think I've told the story, but anyways, but his, the dad is like, he's playing his heart out, right? He's like sweating trying to play, which I'm like, you're doing it wrong if that's the case.
Right.
Anyways, Travis, he's just like, he's not even trying, right? He's just like flicking his wrist, half paying attention, doesn't lose a single point. Okay. And then he finally goes, hey, I have a confession to make to you. And he flips over to the global leaderboard. He's number two. Which are like, that's awesome. Yeah, it was every single one ace. I mean, just like ridiculous. But anyways, Chris Sacca's point was like, he is a competitor and he's a guy to when he sets on his mind to something, he's going to do it.
Right.
I was like, did he set his mind for second on the global leaderboard? Whatever. Yeah. Just to be on it, maybe. Anyways, so then I listened to that and I'm like, all right, maybe Uber's not horrible. I don't know. He's just kind of a jerk. And who isn't? Like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs have kind of not been known to be the nicest of guys. Okay,
right,
I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a pass. I still want to try it. I haven't yet. So that was kind of my own personal, like, I don't know how to feel about them. Well, this week has made it much easier to figure out how to feel about them because they've had a bunch of things. We're going to do this in order of, I don't know, what I perceive to be, we'll start with the least troubling to the most troubling.
Okay. I'm really curious to see how you order this.
Some of them are going to be hard, I'll admit. All right.
I have no input on this. I am super curious to see how James comes up, how he orders this. I'm going to let you control the direction. Now that because for anybody who knows the story, you understand what I'm anticipating.
Okay. So number one is the whole delete Uber thing, because that happened to him. Like, this was less than a month ago.
Right.
They had the whole delete Uber thing.
Which was in response to, then, so people know, basically what happened was all the cabs in New York, they were protesting the temporary immigration ban that got knocked down by the courts, and they were protesting by not picking people up from the New York airport until the green card holders were let into the country. And
Uber went, sweet. Opportunity to help all of these people who need transportation.
And more importantly, and this is what I thought was the most interesting part, is that they actually turned off surge pricing, because surge pricing went through the roof. And their response when they actually have algorithms now that basically say, this is when we expect surge pricing to happen. If it happens outside of that time period, that means something weird is going on. It might be a disaster, and we can't be charging surge pricing during disasters. So they immediately turn off surge pricing. So basically they were like aggressively going for this business which looked real bad.
Yeah. So it turns out that they lost about 200,000 customers on that little gamut there, which like Lyft was doing it too, but they're not king of the hill. And so Uber was the one who got, punished, I guess is the right word for it. So that's the first thing, that they're still quasi, like, they got this bad PR, kind of reeling from
Hashtag delete Uber is catchy enough where people, anytime hashtag delete Uber gets thrown around, it's this building, you know, when we talk about messaging and bad branding, delete Uber is a growing brand. It's this counterculture to, or this counter movement to Uber. And so even if you don't necessarily understand why, it's now something that's starting to grow in the public consciousness. What is delete Uber? And that just starts the process of building up that idea in people's heads. It's a bad place to be for your brand.
Yes, it is. Speaking of another bad place to be for your brand, here's my number two on a list. And again, I'm going in order of the worst problem.
Okay.
Or least worst to most worst.
Right.
So
good English.
The second one is the recent accusation of how do you even pronounce it? It's misogyny.
I'm going to go with
misogyny. I got it. Wow, I cannot read at all. Misogyny, which is, jeez, I was reading it all week going, I can't even, like, what is that word? I just can't read. That's what it comes down to. Misogyny, which, by the way, means the dislike of, contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against women, which, given my very first introduction, all of a sudden going, oh, that's actually, you know, I can believe it.
Yeah.
It's been triangulated for me. So apparently, there was an engineer, a lady engineer. It was her first day. She was propositioned for sex over IM. She brought it to HR, and HR was like, well, it's his first offense, and he's a high performer. So, sorry, we're not doing anything about it. Turns out it was not his, it was his first offense with her. Not his first offense overall. He's been charged by or accused by many individuals. She ended up quitting when she found that out, and that HR was like, well, big deal. And to the point where HR was like, dude, if you keep making these complaints, we're going to fire you.
Right.
And so that's where she was like, this is bad. So she is now suing the company. It has come out. Again, the CEO, Travis, has been like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, what? We're going to investigate this. And so he's put together like a special team to investigate. Everybody on the team is favorable to Uber. And so people, that's like a couple board members, a couple executives, they're just like, dude, you all have, like, no one here has an incentive to tell the truth the way the truth is. So it's kind of one of those where, like, you're not really helping it out. So we're going to see how that ends up. My guess is there's going to be a massive court settlement sometime down the road, and we'll never really get all the details. That's my guess, which is why, again, it doesn't help the brand at all. But from a, like, from a direct, like, their success, probably not.
Well, that is, I mean, delete the hashtag delete Uber caught on again this week.
There you go.
And that was a direct result of these accusations. And I, you know, it's, I mean, this is an interesting one because it's one of those classic, like, sexism against women is a big problem in a lot of your biggest tech companies. And you know, the problem, it's, I don't know. It's a very complicated one in so far as, like, what is actually going on and why. And because it obviously from department to department, the reason for it will change. But one of the things that's very clear is that there is a pipeline issue, period. There are fewer females who get into STEMs classes, which means there are going to be fewer females that are going to become computer scientists and are going to work for these big companies. But there is also very clearly, women leave the industry at a much higher rate than men. And it's almost exclusive, not almost exclusively, but it is largely because of accusations of sexism in the workplace, whether it's unwanted sexual advances or just you don't fit in and they treat you like you don't fit in because you're not a dude and you don't get the dude jokes. And, you know, and it's a big, it's something that the entire industry right now is trying to figure out. And it really doesn't matter whether you're Uber, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon—they're all having issues with that. And I think that I don't know.
He did release some numbers saying that like 15% of their engineers or their workforce—I don't know which one—is women, which was only slightly behind others like Amazon and Facebook.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where the problem is, and this goes under the credibility crisis thing, is that, like, the reason why Apple isn't struggling with the reason why Apple, it's easier for Apple to deal with this is because they don't have an overall credibility crisis going on. When Tim Cook says, "Hey, we're working on this and we're trying to do right by it," you're like, you know, you actually do, like, you show, you know, you show a lot of work towards actually doing this. And, I don't know. I just, So there's not that credibility crisis. And it's sort of like each one of these sort of things, sort of like alone in a vacuum, they wouldn't be a huge issue, or they'd be something that the company could deal with. The problem is that nobody believes that they'll deal with it because of all these other issues. And so if we want to continue James's priority countdown of biggest issues.
Yeah. All right. The next thing. You're gonna laugh that this is number two. This is not number one on the list. Number two. So it turns out that there are thieves as well. It came out this week that Google is suing Otto, who is owned by Uber, for stealing the blueprints of their proprietary LiDAR system. So it turns out that one of the guys in Otto sent out an email to suppliers saying, hey, we've got this new LiDAR circuit board thing, whatever, that we want to have made. Can we get RFPs, requests for proposals for it? And accidentally copied someone from Google.
Whoa.
Classic. To which he instantly was like, what the heck is this? Flagged it up to senior management. They got the Otto co-founder, I don't remember his name, which is, goes about right for this episode. They got his computer and started doing a forensic analysis on it and found that like days and hours before he left, downloaded gigabytes of information, including the plans for this LiDAR system.
If you remember last week, we were talking about the fact that Google paid their employees too much. They paid their employees so much, the Waymo employees specifically,
yeah,
self-driving cars, that they had enough money to go out and adventure on their own. And so quite a bunch of the Google employees quit and then founded Otto, which is the self-driving truck company that then right away got bought by...
Who, by the way, were the ones who made that video of itself driving on a freeway without permission.
Right. Right, which turns out was completely illegal, and the only reason why they didn't get punished for it is because all of the regulation that said you can't do this had no punishments attached to it, because the dude who was running Otto was part of the board that like helped set the guidelines for that those regulations were. So they literally wrote the rules so that they could break them, not get in trouble for it, and then, you know, oh, I guess you'll have to change the regulations. So this is like this, yeah. This dude's, you know, they all kind of fit together. Obviously, Uber is right now denying strenuously that any of this is true, but I mean,
fabricated lies.
I know, but
like, dude, Google and Waymo have been pretty cool with the industry. You know, they're like, yeah, we're doing cool stuff. You guys are doing cool stuff. We just want to see this happen. We're solving hard problems. And so for Waymo to come out like this aggressive, you're going, dude, you did something. Like, this is the classic, like, one of the kids is crying and the other one's going, I don't know what happened. Like, dude, no. Like, no. Come on.
Yeah. So,
we're going to see how this goes. It's going to take a while for it to run through the courts and for everything to be found out. I'm pretty certain they're going to be found guilty, but by then they'll have figured out how to tweak it and change it enough that it won't matter, just like you see in all of the phone cases that happen between Apple and Samsung.
Right.
Time is figured out. Whatever. We've all moved on. It's just a distraction. So, but again, like you said, I think it questions credibility. And I think all of these things are also going to make it difficult to attract talent. Do you want to work for a company that has misogyny, who steals, who's, I don't know. I think people can get over the whole temporary ban thing. If you're looking for a job, you're like, yeah, I get it. as a customer, who knows? But then those alone, okay, are pretty bad, but I still think the company could tick on and survive. That is not why I think Uber is doomed.
Okay, tell me.
Number one reason why they don't charge enough and they're not making money. They are, what was the stat? They're only charging 40% of what they should be charging in order to make money.
Yeah.
And they're like, and that's even with the whole contractor thing. Like, if there's a few court cases that are sitting out there, that if they go against Uber and if they get bumped up to a federal level and eventually someone says, we know that you think that this is a part-time thing and that they should be doing other work, but we know that 30% of your workforce is doing this full-time, which means they're kind of like employees, whether you like it or not, and so therefore you have to treat them like employees. They're definitely doomed.
Yeah.
But even let's assume they win all of those court cases and everyone's considered a contractor, which, given all the recent events, like, we'll see. Even if that happened, they're still losing money. And yeah, there's no clear path forward outside of the idea of maybe driverless vehicles, which, again, we've kind of got issues there. And I thought this was a really good quote on whatever website I'm on. Jalopnik? Anyways, it says, instead of just focusing on being a good taxi company for the digital age, is blowing all sorts of money on self-driving cars in China and now India. The company just so much reflects the megalomania of Travis Kalanick, whatever, and whatever he thinks he's doing. So they're like, for example, they came out with UberX, then Uber Eats. Now they're doing autonomous cars, and now they're even talking about flying cars and all these other things that they're doing. And they're like, dude, just make a profitable business. You don't have one yet. And this isn't the kind of thing where, like, with Facebook, yeah, or Amazon. They used Amazon as a great example, where it was like, yeah, Amazon lost money for a few years, but that was because they had a lot of fixed costs. Like, yeah, we have to build all these servers. But then eventually, that next incremental customer, like, it costs you nothing.
Yeah.
Boom, profitable. Problem with Uber, they don't have that. Most of it's variable.
Well, and another thing that Amazon did is they would come up with a business that would cost them a tremendous amount of money to. They would take 2 or 3 years of investment before that investment would start to pay off. And what they would do is because they kept having money, investors coming in and giving them money, or they were taking on debt or whatever they were doing. So they'd be investing all sorts of crazy money. And then even before that investment started to pay dividends, they started investing in the next thing. So it looked as though year after year, for well over a decade, they never made any money. But that's because but they kept having these investments pay off every single time again and again and again, and they just invested more aggressively. I remember
Jeff Bezos at one time was getting a ton of pressure because they weren't making any money, and he went, fine, we'll slow down on one of our plans, and then boom, made money. And he went, see, we can do it any moment that we want to. Okay, right. Now back to building. And then he went and lost money for another 3 years.
Yeah, it was one quarter. Yeah. And when you actually, like, well, look at it that way, I don't know, it makes a lot of sense why they would do that. Uber doesn't have that privilege. The only way that they could make money is they'd have to charge a lot more for a ride.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and it's like, and the goal seems pretty obvious when you take it in that context, is that the only way for them to make money is to charge more. But if they charge too much, then they'd be competing directly with the taxis. So really and truly, their game plan, and I've somebody pointed this out to me, or I read an article today that pointed this out, like, literally today. And it's just become obvious given the context of a bunch of other conversations. Their goal is to put the taxi companies out of business. And as soon as taxi companies go out of business in a market, they'll start to raise prices, period.
Like, yeah, sure. Perhaps they want to become a monopoly. I get that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, you think?
They're going to run out of money before it does.
Yeah.
I just, like, so one of the things is They made the rides cheaper, and, like, this is another good quote. It says, the Uber thing worked because it was cheaper, and initially it was a more pleasant than a typical taxi. So it worked. But people don't have any loyalty to Uber, not even the drivers. Taxi companies now have apps. You have Lyft out there.
Yeah. Like,
there are things that made Uber, quote, special, that makes them a whole lot less special. The chances of them becoming a monopoly is, like, so small, it's not even going to work. Which, again, fine, focus just on the U.S., become a monopoly in the U.S. But they're not. They're like, oh, we're going to look at China, we're going to look at India. They're going to spread themselves thin and fight tons of battles and not win a single one of them.
I think the reason...
Not sensational, that's true.
And I think the reason why they're going so headlong into self-driving cars, aggressively to the extent of, like, risking major legal battles all over the places because, A, they're kind of reckless, and B, I think it's because they acknowledge what you just said, is that what they're trying to do isn't possible, and their only option is to become a self-driving monopoly. They want to be your go-to ride.
But again, good luck with that, because everyone else is getting into it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, and I mean, Tesla, Elon Musk is openly trying to fight Uber's ability to do that by, like, the whole reason of coming of working with the whole Tesla network thing, where you buy your car, you get out of your car, and it'll go start doing you know, self-driving car pickups for you. The reason why they're inventing that is to be a force against Uber success. And you're like, well, that's pretty. I mean, when Elon Musk decides that you shouldn't win, you're fighting it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to lose, but you're fighting a heavyweight, okay?
Yeah, he's at least going to give you a ton of trouble.
Yeah.
And he's got a cult following. You know, he's going to just, he would start saying stuff on Twitter that would just give you a further headache. And I don't know, which I finally started following him on Twitter, by the way.
Oh,
just
because nice.
His latest one was, roller coasters are awesome. It's like, you know what? I got to agree with the guy. I was trying to figure out, like, is this a metaphor or is this literal? This could go either way with him.
Oh yeah.
I feel like it's probably literal, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, and it's in the weirdest part about it is he could be at a theme park with his kids on a roller coaster, or he could be, he could literally be driving past driving past Six Flags.
Stuck in traffic.
And, yeah. And just looking at it and think, oh, roller coaster are they're awesome. I'm going to tweet that really quick.
I saw one right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch a documentary on it.
Or he's planning on building a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Company. That's the other weird part about him is you're like, oh, this could mean anything.
Yeah. So so for those four very large reasons, Uber's got a problem. I think at the very least, you're going to see Travis step down at some point. Yeah, I think it's hard to survive all this. He needs a grown-up to come in and just kind of help him figure things out. I think he's like 40 years old, too.
So. Are we going to say, yeah, I don't...
They're struggling. They lost a ton of money last year, too. Like, they lost more money than they made. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like... They made $1.5 billion. They lost $2 billion. Like, they got a stockpile, so it's not a big deal. But I think the numbers I read was like at their current rate, which, you know, rates are all going to change. They're like, they're going to run out of money in 3 years. So something has to give at some point. So we'll see. I think they have trouble. They're going to have trouble. I think too, like, I still think ride sharing is a thing, or this, whatever we're calling this.
Well,
is a thing. I don't know if they will continue to be the thing.
Well, it won't. I mean, the self-driving car thing is the thing. That's what comes next.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's the difficult part about all this is that, oh my gosh, this is too good. They want me to, they do this stuff on purpose so that you'll say it. Moonlight just won Best Picture at the 2017 Oscars after La La Land was mistakenly announced as the winner. I know. Yeah, that's
amazing.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to be funny, presenter Warren Beatty later added after the real winner was revealed. It did not work.
Trying to be funny.
Jimmy Kimmel,
not the moment to be funny.
Jimmy Kimmel said, "I blame Steve Harvey."
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, I know.
He will Jeez never Louise. Live that down.
Unless it was intentionally done, you know, they was told to do it because it would. You and I would talk about it at the water cooler, as it were. But that's not cynical enough.
He did not act like he did it on purpose. Oh, are you talking about tonight?
No, tonight, yeah.
Oh, maybe.
You look at Steve Harvey and you look at how much attention it got, and they needed some over-the-top thing. Everybody was expecting La La Land, so it was the perfect, whatever, I want to watch it now. That's exciting. Anyways, back to Uber being dumb. Yeah, so Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. I would say this. I actually think the biggest problems that, okay, I might reorder them in, if we're going to talk about just like really? The company's survivability.
Really?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
Because I agree with you. I think that they've got two big problems. One is an income issue, and that's the biggest existential threat to the company, is that they're going to run out of money.
Right. And there's no clear, like, I get it. Amazon, Facebook, Google, all those people at one point in time are losing money. I think Twitter still is or something like that. I get it. But usually it's because of it's a fixed versus variable cost issue. And it's easy to see if you just get big enough, the problem goes away. I get it.
Their problem gets bigger the bigger they become.
Yes.
Their deficit scales with the company, which is a huge issue. And
especially if you're not charging enough.
Yeah. So
by the way, Seth Godin had a cool little article. I didn't link to it, so you won't be able to see it later. But essentially, he was like, every company should have some sort of emergency button that is like, this is a big enough issue that the CEO should get involved. And you have an opportunity to press said button, and the CEO will personally get involved to figure out what's going on. And this was in reference to the misogyny issue, where he was like, look, if you talk to HR and HR's not taking care of it for you, press the button and get him involved, which I guess gets back to the credibility issue, which I'm like, dude, he has an email address, but I don't know. Anyways, thought it was an interesting article.
Yeah, but I think the problem is he's a bit of a misogynist. So
yeah,
and I would say I guess the second problem that they're going to run into is a talent issue, and that is a complicated. That one has all sorts of factors that go into it, and I think for the week, the misogyny one's a big one. It's just a general attitude about the company that you got to be a certain type of person. You got to be a little bit of a sleaze, a little bit of a slime ball in order to succeed there. And that's one of the biggest, like her, this letter essay thing that the woman wrote was more than just accusations of misogyny. It was just, it talked about the culture of the company and how everybody is pitted against each other and how people cheat, lie, and steal to work their way up. And there is a systemic issue in the cultural issue in the company that makes it very, very toxic for people to work there. You got to be a certain type of person. And it's not the sort of thing that necessarily leads to success. I might argue that it is almost the sort of thing that won't lead to success. And now, but it's one thing if you've got an adversarial company that doesn't work well together and they undermine each other's groups all the time. Like, that's bad. But when you get something that will actually catch people's attention and drive people to your competitors, like, oh, we treat women horribly here. Yeah, that's, you know, that's a pretty big threat.
In order to attract the talent that they need, they're going to have to pay them more, which adds to the problem of the financial side.
Right. And so I would say,
This is what we see about companies like, oftentimes it's post-IPO, where they've got all this talent and they're attracting people by, you know, promising big stock packages, whatever. And then once they go public, then for some reason those companies slow down. And it's often because, the talent doesn't come anymore because you can't offer big stock packages. You've already popped. And you become normal.
I know people who compete for talent with Uber, and that was already kind of an issue. Like, that was, you know, attracting talent is tough, and a good recruiter could get you to, you know, jump to Tesla or Google or Apple or whoever instead of Uber. If they were a good recruiter, just making
it work on you. Did you jump to Google, Tesla, or Apple?
I would have gladly, but I unfortunately did not qualify. So it's one of those. It's a complicated issue. It's just complicated, and they, complicated. I know, and it, but it's a talent thing, and you know, companies are built on people. Like that one investor said, you got to believe in the people, and they're having a people problem. And it's, I mean, and like you said, they've just got so many battles in so many different areas.
All right. So let's pretend you are newly named CEO of Uber. Okay.
Yeah.
What would you do? How would you make it so that this company is not doomed? You know, like, you can't just simply raise your fares. That's not going to, that will cause a different set of problems, unfortunately.
I actually think their self-driving car one is the, I think that I was
out on until they developed that.
Yeah. And it's funny. We were texting earlier this week about, that's right. We text about like thoughts about the tech show when we're not doing the tech show. That's our primary mode of conversation, but we were texting about Snapchat's IPO and criticisms of it and what it means and why it's not.
When I find an article that's bashing on them, I can't help but share it with
them. Exactly.
And I thought we weren't going to talk much about it because we, you know, kind of went deep last time. So I was like, okay, this one's safe to share. Plus, he's a persuasion expert. Scott Adams, I love reading his stuff. He's been talking about nothing but Trump like the last 2 years. It's been awesome because he thinks about it totally differently. Yeah. And then he just recently turned his guns on Snapchat, and it was awesome.
Yeah. So and I agreed with it. And actually, one of my counterpoints was to say, when you talk about IPOing, what companies, you know, I actually pointed out Uber as a good company, that they're not IPOing because they're waiting to raise capital for some reason. What is that capital that they want? They got a ton of capital. They don't need much capital. It's easier to attract talent when you're a startup or pre-IPO. Yeah. And when they go IPO, they're going to have an enormous mountain of money. What do you do with that mountain of money? And I sit there and I go, you buy a car company. Maybe not buy a car company, but you use all that capital to build your fleet of self-driving cars. So, you just hold on.
It's almost like a Kickstarter campaign. We've made the thing. Now we just need your funds to make more of the things.
That's exactly what it is, man. And you just put the biggest fleet in operation, you know, in America, around the world, and that's what you build towards. I think that's their only hope. And I actually think that's what Travis is, the CEO, is doing. Like, I think that that's the general trend. You just hold on tight until you can.
Man, I don't know. If they've only got 3 years left, can they develop it fast enough?
They're a company that does not like to follow the rules and does not care much about safety. So I think.
Notice that too.
I think that certain states are going to allow them to. I mean, they announced this week that they're picking up people in Arizona. Obviously, they still got engineers behind the wheel, but. You know, they're doing their things. Turns out, so earlier this year, when they went to San Francisco for a second and a half, one of the big stories that came out was that one of their self-driving cars ran a red light, and and Uber was like, it was our driver ran the red light. Just send us the ticket. We'll have the driver pay for it. It's not a big deal. Like, and turns out, I can't remember exactly how, but it's like. I think it was the New York Times, an investigative thing, and it turned out the car was driving. It just missed the red light.
Uber.
Yeah, I know. It's this credibility issue. It just keeps building. And
not credible. I almost don't want to use them now.
Yeah, I know.
Delete Uber.
And I look at this sort of stuff that they do. And it's like, you know, there's a part of me that's like, that's if they succeed, that's kind of why they're going to succeed. You know, I wouldn't want, honestly, I just wouldn't want to be CEO of the company, because
he did say, like, one of his things was like, it was essentially like, if someone says no, that's the start of the negotiation.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, all right. That's one attitude. And he's like, no, you just keep pushing. It's like, and most people don't like confrontation. So if you push back and create confrontation, you'll win, because most people don't like it. Like, that's his attitude.
I know. Yeah.
Which totally shows.
It totally does. And I it works, you know, more than people want to admit. And I look at what's going on with this, and I just my gut is that, you know, they're going to be the reason why I say I wouldn't want to be CEO is because there is a huge systemic cultural issue that they are not, that's hard to deal with. And I wouldn't know where you would even start trying to fix it. And
So part of it, I mean, like, let's just say you wave your magic wand, you take care of the misogyny stuff, and you would instantly start, you would create directives.
No, well, it's not even the misogyny stuff. It's the misogyny stuff revealed all sorts of other cultural stuff that I think make it very difficult for the company to succeed.
So, okay, fine. So you start working on that. You're making progress. However that happens, right? We don't need the details, but that becomes a focus you put into the plan. Part of it is you find out who the worst offenders are and you fire them day one. You bring in other people who are known to have character, but whatever. So you start fixing that. I feel like that should be pretty high priority. And then, there's a part of me that's like, you got to bring in some financing genius or pricing genius who's going to help you figure out, like, or swallow the pill of you need to charge. You can't, I mean, obviously you can't do a, can't double your prices, but you need to increase everything 10% instantly. And then in 6 months, you need to increase it 10% again. And then in 6 months, you need to increase it 10% again. And just get into this, like, you just got to keep increasing it up. And you got to give, I don't know, give the full 10% to the driver. Or not, that's not what I'm trying to say. Like, increase the driver fees 10% as well. Right? However much you increment it for them too, so you only get to keep whatever that percentage of that is. And maybe it's like, and maybe you do it once a year at 20%, or you make your surge pricing a little more surgy pricing. Like, there's certain things and games that you can do to start increasing your revenue. I also think you say, you know what, stop spending money expanding. Like, the cities that you're in, cool, whatever, be in those cities, but, like, focus, become a dominant player in one of these places, and, you know, and spend your time and energy thinking about those. And because if you can destroy a taxi company in New York, cool, right? Because taxi companies are inherently local. So do the, like, just do the focus method for those.
Yeah, things. I would agree. Focus is important.
I would say, like, flying cars. What? No.
Yeah, seriously. Stop it. I would say their other problem is that, you know, competition's coming along. So there's another company that announced this week that they're called Embark. And they're a self-driving truck company, and they're ready to assist human drivers.
Nice.
Yeah, they're revealing their tech for the first time, showing off.
So totally unrelated, but I just watched the Cars 3 trailer today.
Yeah.
Does that look even remotely good?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've watched the original Cars recently because I have a daughter.
Yeah.
But, which, it's a good movie, by the way.
Oh, it's a great movie, yeah.
In case you haven't seen it recently, it holds up well. It's still good.
Yeah.
The scene where Max's starting to get tired, I feel like this is what made me think of it. And the cars come up and they're bumping the music. They go, hey, we got a daughter.
Yeah.
And turn on the Kenny G. You're just like, oh, that's awesome. Anyways, good movie. Cars 3, it doesn't leave that same emotional, well, like, why Cars, do I care?
Cars 2 was horrible.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was just, I well,
like, where do you go from there? He learned a life lesson. You know, no, that's so, like, we go back to racing?
This is the thing. Cars, like, Cars 1 was the Pixar A-team. It was one of the first ones that John Lasseter was not super heavily involved in, though.
Okay.
Which is why, from an IMDb perspective, it was their first, like, big stumble, because it only cleared like 91%, whereas every other Pixar had cleared 98% up to that point.
Geez.
I know. Well, you know, they were playing by different rules at that point. And then Cars 2 was made by the B team, and
that was like the airplanes and stuff, right?
That one, well, the Airplanes one is like, Airplanes is weird because it's obviously the same universe, but it's a Disney studio animations. It's not actually Pixar branded, whereas Cars 2 is Pixar branded, but it's Mater becomes a secret agent in Cars. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was
unbelievable.
I know, it was so dumb. It's terrible. It's so bad. But so what they're trying to do is they're trying to come back.
It's kind of weird that you know this, but that's cool.
Right?
I'm gonna let that go for now.
I don't have a kid, so I can read a lot. And then
did you ever see it?
I actually have never seen it.
Okay. All right.
But then the dilemma became, and it's like really poorly rated in, on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm going to look it up because I'm curious. Cars
2. Rotten Tomatoes, or do you go IMDb and it's on there?
I go Rotten Tomatoes first, and then I look for the movie. Cars 2 got a whopping 39% on. Yeah, like that's Ooh. It was actually really Ooh. Bad.
That's bad,
and that's in that ballpark of not bad enough to be ironically good.
Yeah, like you got to be single digits for it to be like, now I'm almost interested to see why it was so bad.
Exactly. By Pixar's outrageous standards of Oscar shoo-in I can't even read that one. Larry the Cable Guy has helped make Mater one of Pixar's sweetest creations. He just happens to reside in the studio's least magical franchise. Sequel. Yeah, so anyways, So the thing is, they're trying to. Cars 3 is being made by the A team again, and so they're trying.
By the way, Suicide Squad got a 26 on Rotten Tomatoes. Just want to put that out there. I feel like you got to clear the 50% bar.
Yeah, right.
Anyways,
so
hey, Oscar nominated or won, whatever.
I know.
What Oscar do I know?
Award winning.
26.
I know. So
sorry.
Yeah. So the thing is that it's the A team. It's coming back to do Cars 3 to sort of, this is what Cars 2 should have been, is basically what they're saying. And the direction that they're going to go is that it's another life lesson one. It's a, you know, he was the hot shot and
who, the hot rod.
And he took himself to, you know, he didn't have family, didn't have relationships. He was just like, he was great. But he needed a team and he didn't realize that. And so he learned the lesson of, hey, you need a team. Now this is he's old. He's not the fastest car out there, you know, but he still values his relationships. How does he deal with that? You know, how does he become the old guy in Cars 1 that helps him?
King?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, you're talking about Doc.
Yeah, Doc. Yeah, how does he become Doc from Cars 1? That's what I'm predicting this movie does.
I don't know, because in the trailer there's a crash.
Yeah.
And then, like, you're never going to race the same way again. And I, like, imagined this Rocky scene where he's, like, on the beach trying to go fast. And
That might be
know,
it.
Rocky 3, right? Where it's like he just got beat by...
I can't not think of Talladega Nights for this specific thing. And him going, I'm going so fast! He's going, like, 12 miles per hour on the track after his accident. I'm on fire! That fire is invisible!
That's a funny movie.
Oh, my gosh. I know so many people...
Chuck and
Norris. I know so many people that hate that movie, and I love it.
Applebee's, man. America's a restaurant. You're just like,
shake and bake. Oh my gosh. Oh,
classic.
Yeah, so good. You're not first.
Anyways, back to real cars.
Yeah, so so the other competition that they're so Embark is coming in and they're basically doing what Otto is doing, but like legally going through the right channels, getting good approval.
Hey,
so,
amazing.
You know, that kind of helps. And the team is SpaceX alumni and Google alumni, and you know, it's a similarly awesome team, but with a
good
little
pedigree.
Worse. Exactly.
They didn't poach anybody. Everybody from, was it MIT or wherever?
Oh yeah, they
took all the people.
That's right. Carnegie Mellon, I think it was.
Carnegie Mellon. Yeah, that's right.
They set up a lab across the street from Carnegie Mellon and hired all the professors.
We just want to learn. That's all.
Oh, jeez, what a company. So Lyft is the other big name competitor to Uber. This year they've been like, hey, we're doing pretty well. We want to expand. So, Lyft said it was going to grow fast in 2017. And on Thursday, doubled down on that promise when it launched across 54 cities in the U.S.
Wow.
Launches the greatest or the largest simultaneous expansion for the ride hailing company. Second to its earlier kickoff of 40 cities announced in January, which also...
I'm really annoyed that their list of cities is not alphabetical.
Yeah, right?
Is it? And I'm just, like, not smart enough to figure... I don't... How does this work?
I don't... Yeah.
I just want to look for Portland. There's P's everywhere. Yeah, maybe they're already there.
Maybe
Corvallis.
But the idea was, which they made clear by the end of the year, it sought to grow to 100 new markets. So it's now at 94 new markets. So if I'm doing my math correctly, Lyft only has to add 6 additional markets to complete its 2017 expansion goals. Then that gives the company plenty of time to focus on other things for the year, like maybe launching autonomous services in a few initial markets. In its partnership with GM Cruise.
Beaverton and Portland.
Yeah, bummer. Or making some of those remaining new markets international ones. So Lyft is doing their thing. You know what? I'm going to be honest. I've always gotten a better feeling from Lyft than I have from Uber. Like, even really? In the early days, back when I knew nothing about the companies, I just knew that I could get a Lyft or an Uber in San Francisco. Like, Lyft, back when they had, like, the big mustache thing,
I think they still do.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, like, they straight up, like, you had to have, like, a pink mustache, like, strapped to the front of your car. And I was just like, I didn't love that. I was like, this seems kind of weird, guys. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with your branding? But at the same time, like, Uber was like, I don't know, one of my big problems is that we'd always use it with friends, and it was like you didn't want to pay for the Uber or the Lyft, so you just didn't have the app downloaded. You're like, oh man, I haven't downloaded it yet, so I can't get it. I mean, if we were getting a taxi, I'd be happy to pay, but getting a Lyft. Oh man, I downloaded the app, but I don't have my credit card information in it yet, and we're in a hurry, so maybe you should just call. And then eventually that one, you know, they your friends can only put up with that for so long before they're like, just do it. Okay.
That's funny.
But it's actually, yeah.
I just don't have any friends I travel with.
Yeah. Hey, be in your 20s in the city, James, and then you'll have that experience. But yeah, so it's
that phase.
I know. So there's a thing going on with Uber right now. It's not good. This is my
doomed.
This is my prediction. You'll see the company pivot in a new direction sometime in the next year or two.
That's obvious.
They'll be fine. I think they'll be fine. I think
pivot out of ride sharing altogether?
I think you'll see them launch a self-driving car. I think that they're going to get super aggressive about that, and that's going to be their big thing.
They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
If they want to stick around, maybe they can wait until next year, but
I'll bet the Uber CEO sticks around and people, because the thing is right now they're the cheapest, most convenient. They're in more locations. They cost very little and they're really convenient. If you're not in the middle of downtown, and you don't want to call a cab to come and wait for them. They're for a lot of cities. There really isn't a Lyft alternative. So, you know, that's changing, but there's a big lag. You know, Uber's going to have another year at least of being the dominant first pick for a lot of people. And Uber went and actually negotiated with airports. So Uber can pick you up at the airport. Lyft can't. Like, you know, for a lot of airports, they just have some systemic advantages that keeps their brand growing, even though they're losing money. And I think that as a result, they've got a bit of a runway to figure out self-driving cars, and I think they will. I don't know. Maybe I'll feel differently, but I feel like they've had a really, really bad week, and so there's a real temptation to jump on the.
But again,
this company is doomed.
It was a bad week because of serious fundamental flaws with the company.
I know.
You know, it's one thing to be like, oh, we made a mistake. It's another to where it's like, no, all of these are systemic.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. The whole banning thing, that was oops. But
yeah, I just think, I guess what my problem is that it's not, there's isn't other, so the profitability one is a huge issue in 3 years.
Yeah.
All the rest of these alone are bad, but they're not, you know, they're not deal breakers.
I think it looks
worse today than it actually is.
You just don't root for them. That's the biggest issue.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think that's why it was so easy to have the hashtag delete Uber.
Yep.
Because it's easy to not root for them.
They're kind of scumbags. Just
give me a reason. And they're king of the hill. Makes it doubly worse.
And that's, you know, and it's, to me, I think what's going to be a problem is it's like, I can only have one or two companies that I really hate at a time that I'm rooting to die. Like, and BlackBerry is so solidly a boutique. They launched a new phone this week and I don't even want to, I didn't even link an article because I'm just like, whole thing's over. But like, Snapchat is the company I'm focusing on not liking right now, James. And I'm not quite ready to wind myself up for Uber, especially because
I'll do it for you.
Especially because
they're doomed.
Yeah, I think they're going to be the first company to have self-driving car services, and it might be a disaster. Better chances than I want to admit that it's going to be a disaster. But I kind of like the cut of their jib with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of exciting. You know, unlike the camera company that is Snap that doesn't actually have an exciting product, Uber is trying to do something innovative or and exciting
anymore.
Yeah, awesome. I know. That company is such a mess.
It's an ephemeral company. What can we say?
I know. And you know what the best part about it is? Like, a lot of your big mutual fund and like and stock portfolio guys, like the guys that make IPOs happen, are pretty upset about the fact that they can't get voting shares. They're like, I'm not really interested in investing.
I read a backstory on that, trying to figure out like why.
Yeah.
And it turned out that when Snapchat was first getting started, their company was starting to go up, and they had a conversation with an investor who he just like read about him and was like, this is cool, I'd like to invest. And it just so happened that they were sick of asking their parents for money to pay their bills. And so they're like, yeah, we'll take whatever you got. And so he made an investment. It was like 400 grand. You know, it wasn't maybe 500 grand, not a ton of money. That's a ton of money, but you know what I mean? From a VC standpoint.
Oh yeah. For a startup that's worth billions now, a half million is not a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this company now, they're going to net like over $1 billion. Like that's an awesome ROI.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. But one of the things that he did was he stuck language in there that essentially gave them first right of refusal for any future investment and set of investors, and just kind of like put it in there. And they signed it and were like, oh yeah, this is standard normal stuff. And then they found out later, like, no, this is not standard normal stuff. And so pretty quickly the Snapchat guys were like, oh, investors are horrible individuals and they'll try to get anything they can out of you. And so that was when Evan Spiegel started to put things into motion, got a bunch of lawyers and tried to figure out like, okay, how do we get around this? And ended up negotiating with them and essentially was able to get out from underneath that clause, had to give something up, and ended up creating a special class of shares and all sorts of stuff in order to do it, but instantly soured them against investors, which is why you're seeing what you're seeing now. And this is the whole, like, I don't know, you make what you think will happen.
Yeah.
Like, now they've set it up in such a way where they have an adversarial relationship with their investors because they're afraid of having an adversarial relationship with their investors.
Yeah, I read an article that was a review of that article because it was a time that original nice. Article was a Times article. And
yeah, it was
TechCrunch. One of the TechCrunch authors was just like, I don't buy it. He was like, it doesn't make any sense. You got this dude who's the genius that I'm constantly told that Evan Spiegel is a genius, that he's one of the smartest guys out there.
26-year-old genius at law.
Both of Evan Spiegel's parents are law professors from Harvard or Yale. And they are all the original investors or all the original inventors went to Stanford. More startups have come out of Stanford than in, like, there is no person. There is basically no person who's ever started up a company in college who was better prepared to not fall into that trapping. Now, obviously he did. There are legal reasons why, you know, like legally, like the contract existed. But
if you remember the early emails with one of their former co-founders, like he's kind of an idiot as well. So he very much like goes with his gut feel and gets emotional about things. And this has got to be one of them. This guy waved a $500,000 check in front of him, and he got excited.
Well, and the author's point is that, look, he's not saying that that's not what happened. What he's saying is this is a bad move, and that is their excuse for this bad move.
Ah.
Is that they're trying to blame it on this one dude. Like, oh, it's his fault. No, blame him for why we have to do this. And the author's just like, that doesn't make any sense. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing, Evan Spiegel? And, like, you're trying to explain this away in a really contrived sort of way. Like, everybody has bad angel investors. That's what angel investors are. They take way more of the company for way too little money. Like, that's what an angel investor is. We give them that name.
Because there's a ton of risk on their end. I get it.
Exactly. They're giving you $500,000 for nothing.
And I to help you pay your bills because your business isn't working yet.
Yeah, you have no business on a whim. And yeah, this guy snuck in some language in a way that kind of gave him the what it effectively allowed him to do was it allowed that investor to have a veto on all future investors. Right. So he could basically say, so Evan Spiegel didn't get to say, oh, I like this investor. That guy could come and say, no, he's a bad investor. I don't want to be working with him. So this guy that only gave $500,000 now gets first writer, gets veto power over these, you know, $100 million investors. And Evan Spiegel was losing his mind over it, which, you know, you would, but this investor's like, and this article went on to say that, like, honestly, that language isn't that crazy. Like, by VC standards, that's hardly the craziest thing VCs ever tried to do. Like, every VC tries to sneak in horrible deals for you. It's your job to not get caught by those horrible deals, to hire lawyers to go, no. We're not going to do that. And nice. Evan Spiegel didn't, and they got caught, and they're upset. But it goes to this whole, like, mentality. It goes to the Steve Jobs complex that he has of, like, oh, I'm the genius. I'm the one that's in charge of all this. I don't want anybody else getting in the way. Like, he's afraid of the Steve Jobs moment of where Steve Jobs got kicked out of his own company because the investors who had more voting shares voted him out. And
I hate to be this way, but
I know
the board can do it too.
The right decision at the time to kick Steve Jobs out. Like, it was the right decision for Steve Jobs. It was not the right decision for Apple, but that's because Apple was going in the wrong trajectory. Like, Apple had bigger issues, but it ended up being like Steve Jobs wasn't helping the company at the time. He had to grow up, and he did, and he came back and turned Apple into what it is today. But that couldn't have happened if they had kept him on the whole time. So it's I don't know. It's just one of those. Jeez, how did you get me into this, man? Evan Spiegel is such a jerk.
I don't know.
You want to know it's a company that's trying to change the future, James? And I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah.
The Universal Postal Service. No, the United Postal Service. UPS.
Really?
Yeah. So they built a UPS truck that has a giant drone attached that sits on top of it, and they can, like, go into the truck thing. There's a basket that hangs through the roof. They can throw your package into the basket, drone will take off, and do the last mile delivery for them.
That's awesome.
It is pretty awesome. There was one problem. They were doing this demo for a bunch of news media, and it came in, and there was a breeze or something, and it, like, crashed on top of the trucks. But they're at least working on it. That's the thing. They're like, yeah, we want to get this going. It's pretty exciting. It's funny. Our dad got in there has been an atmospheric river coming through Central California for the past couple of days and just been plummeting us with rain, mudslides, and everything. And so our parents' house was blocked off for a little while. They weren't able to get home, and which also meant deliveries weren't able to get them. And so our dad forwarded us a text message from Amazon saying there's currently, like, blockage on the road. So we're going to deliver your package by drone? And which I thought was a pretty funny Easter egg for when you're, yes. But turns out they're just delivered it by car. I managed to get that sorted.
The USPS could really use that, because currently the way it works in my neighborhood is the post office person parks at the end of the block and then walks the block to deliver the mail. And I've had a thought where I'm like, there's got to be a more efficient way to do this.
Yeah, this is definitely, we're going down this road. Amazon is clearly still, they're trying to figure out how to get that.
It's got
to
be the biggest expense for a bunch of these companies in order, you know, just delivering packages.
Right, yeah. It's not just they
and it's not a fixed expense, right? That's a variable one. That's the problem.
Exactly. It goes up with it. And it's not just, and that's the worst part, right?
Charge an appropriate amount. Take a clue.
Yeah, right.
Uber's doomed.
Oh. But it's like, one of the big issues there, right, is that it's, we describe it as the last mile like problem. But it's not even the last mile. It's like you said, sometimes it's just the last block is a real, it kills it, because because it just takes so long. So if they could eliminate that last block, it would be a huge step in the right direction, much less the last mile. And
yeah.
So yeah, it's exciting to watch.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be twice as fast; just 20% as fast.
Exactly.
That's a big deal.
Just make it a little bit easier. Also,
plus it's cool.
Yeah, I know. I like it. So you want to know what's
a drone basket on my house? What is that? Kind of like a bat house, but for drones, like a drone house. I have to think about that. Right? Like if you were doing drone delivery, what would be the preferred method of delivery?
A robotic arm that would just snatch your package out of the air.
Maybe.
Yeah, awesome.
I was thinking more like a basket and shoot, but
yeah, no, that's better. That's a little bit easier, but you asked what the coolest was. No, so I don't know. I like it. I'm excited. In other news, Nokia, which is how you're supposed to pronounce the brand Nokia. Yeah, they're not only are they still around, James, but they're growing better than ever.
But I thought they were bought by Microsoft and then not.
No, so the mobile division was bought by Microsoft.
Okay.
And then Nokia stayed around and kind of did their – they were doing other stuff. And so then Microsoft sold a big chunk of the Nokia mobile division to a company called HMD. And now like there's – so this week there was a couple of big announcements. Nokia bought – Withings, which is they do a bunch of like wirelessly connected health
stuff. I literally bought a scale this week.
Yeah.
From them.
Yeah.
I bought their Body Cardio.
Yep. So this is that's that company. They do a bunch of stuff like that. They're a French brand that builds like scales and stuff like that. So
dude, it's awesome. The scale, like it's so sweet. So I got a smart scale now. So it takes my weight and it knows who I am. It also figures out my fat mass, my muscle mass, my amount of water, my bone mass. It also somehow magically is able to, it'll check my pulse, but then also tell me like what my pulse wave velocity is.
Whoa, that's
cool. I don't know what that is yet, but it tells me.
I don't even know what that is, yeah. It's good to track it. That's the important part. Yeah, so basically what Nokia announced is that they are going to, now that they own Withings, they're going to wane off that brand.
Is that
brand.
How you pronounce it? Withings?
I don't know. W-I-T-H.
Withings.
Withings, maybe. It doesn't matter, James. The brand's going away. It's going to become Nokia-branded scales. But this is the interesting part. HMD is a cell phone manufacturer, mobile device manufacturer, who bought the Microsoft-purchased mobile division from Nokia, and they have now worked with Nokia to license the Nokia brand from Nokia. So, so now all of HMD phones are going to be branded Nokia phones. So Nokia phones are coming back.
Wow.
And specifically, everybody's really excited about the Nokia 3310, 3310. It's the legendary indestructible cell phone that everybody had in high school for us. Even you had it for a while, right?
I did.
I believe so. Yeah, so that one's they're bringing it back, the exact same model and make. Everything's exactly no, actually it's not exactly the same. It's kind of completely different. It's a it's a feature phone is actually how they're describing it. So it's going to be it's not going to be like a full-blown smartphone. You can't download apps and stuff. It only has 2G service. It texts. It makes phone calls. It has a
If you can do group texting, I have a friend who could really benefit from this.
I don't know.
He has a T9 phone, and it doesn't do group texting. It's crazy annoying.
That probably, I don't know. It would be interesting to see if it does. Probably, I guess. But yeah, so this thing does, it's going to cost $50. It'll have a 25-day standby time, so you can have it just on all the time for 25 days on the charge. It has like 24 hours worth of talk time. So it's just a feature phone that you can get for cheap. It's dual SIM card, which is popular in Europe and Asia. I've no data, which kind of a thing nowadays, but you know, doesn't have any apps either. It does have Snake, like the classic
Snake
3310
great game.
Looks different. It's got a physical keyboard. Yeah, but it's basically like when Ford brought back the Mustang. We're like,
which I saw one at the Eleanor and I went shopping, and it took off in the parking lot. And Eleanor was like, "Ooh, what's that?" that a girl.
That nice. You know, which anytime like these car companies bring back these classic brands, it's kind of weird because it's a completely different looking car, and you know, you just like. It just has the same brand on it. Oh, yeah. I don't mind it, but it's kind of weird. They pitched it as we're bringing back the 3310, and then they
kept it. Retro.
Yeah. Yeah. Just they're working on. Basically, what it was decided this week is that Nokia has the best brand out of all three of these companies. So they're going to. Everything's going to go Nokia again.
Huh.
Yeah. Pretty exciting, I guess.
Wow, it really sounds like it. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but I'm not a super fan of Chairman Ajit Pai.
Okay.
FCC chairman.
Yeah.
Newly appointed dude. He just, something about it rubs me the wrong way. You know, I think the thing I liked about Tom Wheeler, the previous FCC chairman, was... he always at least seemed like he wanted to weigh the pros and cons, think about it, take his time, come up with a reasonable argument and decision that made most people happy. You know, or at least you're like, I don't love it, but I at least get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I felt like he was a rational human being. Whereas I feel like Ajit, I'll call him by his first name, why not? Because I can't say his last name. He's just kind of like, he's a gunslinger. You know, I got this idea. We're going to do it. Boom, 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 boom. Don't even worry about it. So like, for example, there's two of them this week, right? Which like with Tom Wheeler, it was like he was lucky to do one a month. Anyways, so I guess there's a rule that is getting ready to come into place in March 2nd that essentially requires ISPs, internet service providers, to take, we're going to put in quotes here, reasonable steps to protect customers' information.
Okay.
You know, little things like social security numbers, financial information, health information.
Who needs that to be? Yeah.
You know, essentially things that come through the ISP's pipes, which is everything, by the way.
Right.
And he came out and was like, we're going to block this. We're just not even going to do it. Whatever. And apparently, like, there's some weird voting stuff. I didn't fully understand it. So there's still a chance it goes through, but he doesn't want it to and is trying as hard as he can to stop it. And one of the things is, like, you have to have a full commission vote. But if you can't do the vote, then they're going to – I don't know. It's complicated. But the point is that he says that ISPs shouldn't face stricter rules than other online providers like Google and Facebook because they don't have any of these like reasonableness rules because they're regulated by the FTC. He instead is going, he's throwing out the neutral word, technology neutral privacy framework for the online world. And again, saying they shouldn't be treated special. Though again, Tom Wheeler, when he first came out with it, said, no, they should be, because they know a lot more than Google and Facebook. Like, it's not like we're saying, oh, you know, Facebook knows a lot more about people than if our podcast.
Right. Right? Yeah.
Like, we know emails and names. Facebook knows a couple. We know, we don't know individual listening habits, I guess.
Right.
We just know aggregate listening habits. Facebook knows a lot more. They're like saying, like, that's not even the right comparison.
Yeah.
It's a totally different world. Like, they literally have access to things that I, like, so again, social security numbers, anything that's transmitted over it, they have access to it.
Right.
And again, the rule didn't sound that crazy when you start reading through it. It was like, well, you know, they just have to take reasonable measures. And the idea was they have to show they took reasonable measures in order to get help in the time of a crisis, was the idea. So, like, if they get hacked, if they can show that, look, we tried to do our best to manage the risk, then the FCC would help them solve whatever their problem was. If they didn't show the reasonableness, the FCC was like, dude, made your own bed on this one, didn't you?
Right.
So, and they even, like, they didn't tell them exactly what they had to do, which I think is, you know, there's a part of me that, like, if you were going to fault anything, that would be it. But they just said, here are some things we suggest that you do. Like, you know, bank-level encryption, that kind of stuff. But you don't have to. If you come up with your own, like, way of doing this, cool. You know, we're okay with that. So, anyways, so that's just one where I'm like, oh, he just... And part of it, too, I get the sense that he's not totally doing it from a philosophical standpoint, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like,
he's talking to different lobbyists, and he's got a bent, for sure, but clearly not playing the, I just want what's best for the internet.
Right.
Because here's the other one that's a little weird, and I don't know how I feel about it. But apparently, we can expect that this spring, you're going to have carriers who will be creating, I don't know, cards, mobile data plans, or whatever, that support a new technology called LTE-U.
Okay.
Which I love this. Which may result in faster, smoother mobile experience.
Yeah. Yay.
So LTE-U is LTE unlicensed. Or another way to say it would be the same waves that Wi-Fi goes over. So cell phone signals got their own band. Wi-Fi and I think Bluetooth, and there's probably like three or four others, have their own other band. It's this unlicensed band that they're in.
Right.
And for a long time, the FCC was like, let's keep them separate. You know, let's not put them together. And our new FCC chairman... awesome guy that he is. He says, now we're going to start sharing. Let's go back to the wild, wild west of, you know, everyone on top of each other. And the best part about this is, like, no one really knows. It's the interesting part. No one knows if putting everybody on the same band, if that's even going to work. They're like, this could turn into a battle of Wi-Fi versus 4G LTE. And
jeez.
In the sense that, like, it'll crowd the spectrum. Like, you could have dropped things happening because
right.
The cell phone towers are messing with your signals, which I don't totally know how that works, but I'm like, man, I can see that. I don't know if Wi-Fi is affected by walls, it can be affected by other things. And so they expect further, like, yeah, mixed signals will probably happen more often now because of this, because in theory, the signal is a little bit better because it's the different band, and so carriers are going to kind of go for it. That was the other one, like Bluetooth, and they're like, because these are things that are like garage door openers, baby monitors, key fobs for cars. So there's a lot of things where you're like, this may be cool. Maybe you can finally unlock your car door with your phone. I don't know. Maybe that'd be awesome.
Right.
Like Bluetooth would have done that for you, but I don't know, whatever. But again, he's just kind of like, yeah, we're doing this. I'm approving it. Done. Moving on. Next question.
Right.
I just wish he would just take his time and, like, do his due diligence. I just find it hard to believe that he's done his due diligence in a month on some of these issues.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know.
He, Yeah, I don't know. I just get the feeling with him. I gotta say, I get the feeling with him that he's a, you know, I always feel weird going down this political, you know, walkway. But to me, I look at it as one of the biggest issues that one of the things that drives me nuts is when you get crony capitalism, as it were, because these giant companies that have tons of lobbying money can lobby these guys and set the rules up such that it is disadvantageous for competitors or individuals. They, you know, one of the reasons why we have the situation that we have with the telecoms is because they lobbied the government so that they can have these little local monopolies and then claim it's not a monopoly because we don't have the entire country. There's all sorts of competitors. Like, yeah, but if you have a local monopoly, that's effectively the same. And the, you know, that wasn't an accident. That was done on purpose through lobbying of the government. And I didn't agree with everything that Tom Wheeler did, but he definitely seemed to at least try to resist the effect of that sort of thing in a way that this guy doesn't. This guy he rubs me the wrong way, man.
I'm pretty certain that net neutrality is going to go away.
Oh, yeah.
Like the next 6 months, and he's not even going to know what that is.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
He's going to go free competition. That's what we want. It's neutral now. No.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not impressed so far.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right. I'm off my political soapbox. It's a concern, maybe is the way to put it.
Yeah, I'm frustrated by it, man. I'm frustrated by it.
At least
So you want to know something we can get excited about, James? A little bit of
old fashioned
good competition. This is it. There's the last article. All right.
I love good old fashioned. Yeah, we're over the 2 hour mark. So yeah.
Oh, there we go. AMD announced this week what they're calling the Ryzen processor, and it's a huge leap forward and a true competitor to Intel. So Intel has had their I series that they've been upgrading incrementally year after year. I3, the i5, the i7, and AMD has really done nothing to compete with them. And so Intel has basically had reign supreme, charge whatever they want for processors because there wasn't really any competition. If you wanted the best processor, you just paid whatever they were charging.
Yeah, you got a Core i5 and called it a day.
Exactly. Most companies get, you know, most computers are getting Core i5s. Anything high end gets a Core i7. And for your sort of
low-end, I got an i7 on my work laptop. It's awesome.
My Mac Mini's got an i7. It is quite nice. AMD, they just officially announced this chipset. The Ryzen family will come in multiple flavors, but the high-end Ryzen 7, which is a direct competitor to the i7, is shipping first. The chip has 8 cores and 16 threads, which is quite a few threads. And cool. It starts at a mere $329 for the chip. At the top end, is the 3.6 gigahertz, 4.0 gigahertz turbo, $499 Ryzen 7 1800X, which compares well with Intel's $1,050 i7 6900K. According to AMD's benchmarks, the 1800X ties the 6900K on single-thread benchmarks and beats Intel on multi-thread performance. And worth mentioning again that it costs $500 compared to the $1,050. So it's same performance single-thread, better performance multi-thread, and costs less than half. So this is not great news for Intel. AMD. Yeah. Thank you. Is actually really good news for companies like Amazon who build server farms out of these things. They're launching this high-end chip first. The other chips will come along later, and they're expecting a similar pricing scheme where, you know, around half the price of the Intel competitor as it currently stands. So if we actually got to get these chips, Ars Tech has to go through and actually test the chips and then do a 700-page article on it.
I love those 700 pages.
I will only
read the intro and the conclusion.
Yep, it's really all you need. I'm glad somebody's doing it because it makes it feel legitimate, but I can't parse those things.
It's like they get paid per word.
It really is. They're thorough. I'll give them credit.
Give them that. That's their thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll actually see if these benchmarks are legit. They probably are at least pretty close to being legitimate. There's no reason to not think that's true. But yeah, it'll definitely, it's going to force Intel to drop their prices, which is pretty exciting.
Come out with faster chips.
Yeah. Which isn't super easy. Well, and one of the tricks here is what AMD is actually doing to do this is that it's that 3.6 versus 4.0 gigahertz turbo chips. These chips are way more power hungry. They get way hotter and because they're just running them faster. And that's how AMD is managing to keep up with Intel. Is Intel's got better, smaller transistors, better tech. They can do those speeds at a lower clock hertz. Because at 4.0 gigahertz is like your top end of what a computer can, like what a chip can manage before you get into requiring extra cooling stuff. So
got it.
They're really pushing them at the power consumption end. So these things won't work great in laptops, which is not, but we'll see what happens at the lower end.
It's the start.
Yeah. So it's exciting. Intel or AMD is going to apply a little pressure and for the first time in a decade. And should be good for everybody except Intel.
Awesome. Okay, man. Good show.
Cool. All right.
Good stuff all around. And everybody else, thank you for listening to us. And thank you so much for listening to episode 283. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes at furloughbros.com. Cloud Bleed's been fixed. If you would also like to get the show notes sent directly to you, you can sign in on that same page and avoid Cloud Bleed altogether. Unless MailChimp uses them, in which case, well, bummer. Finally, this podcast, I doubt they use them. They're big enough. Anyways, this podcast is supported by listeners like you. And if you would also like to contribute, we have 4 different levels. Fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, which each have their own levels of rewards. It's awesome. Again, you can check it all out at furloughbros.com to see how you too can become a patron. Okay, I am James Furlough, and my Lego Dark Knight brother is Matthew Furlough, and so we will talk next time. Thank you.